The Time Traveling Robots in Space is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
The Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast starts now.
It's Thursday, October 4th, 2012, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Time Traveling Robots in Space, episode number 46, from Glendale. Wait a second. No. Paul's not here.
Not Glendale.
From Wausau, Wisconsin, filling in for Paul Swickard, it's Brad Ludwig from the Alien Invasion Podcast. Hey, Brad.
Hi. I definitely can't fill Paul's shoes, but I'm just showing up to fill up that third box in the video slot there. So,
Paul, Lou in the chat room is wondering where Paul is. Paul, last minute, had to care for his wife, who is pregnant, and he thought that he should do the husbandy thing to do is to comfort and take care of his wife and good training for the upcoming kid. So I applaud Paul for doing that.
And perhaps rubbing her feet.
I'm sure
that's what you do.
That's on the list of things, I'm sure. All right. So Paul's not here. Brad is filling in for Paul, but our regular co-host, Anessa Moyens. How are you, Anessa?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm not too bad. This is our first night of doing the two Galactic Netcasts back to back, so we're all warmed up. We're all stretched. So we can't screw this one up, or can we?
Oh, challenge accepted.
Yes.
I'm just that guy.
Yeah. Brad's the
I bet you we can.
Yeah. Brad's the man for the job. All right, this is the show where we discuss news and other things relating to time travel, robots, and space in science, science fiction, TV, movies, games, comics, pop culture, real life, you name it, we talk about it. If it's time travel, robots, and space, we discuss it on this show. We do a story from each topic, plus discuss our entertainment picks and ask the panelists one very thought-provoking question. And I hope that we have a question of the week? We didn't before, and we still don't.
I have no idea. So, like, I didn't even...
So one of us has to think of a question of the week before the end of the show. Can we do that?
I think new guy has to do it.
Okay. Well, Brad.
I'm okay with that.
Perfect.
Brad can think of a question.
Think of a question relating to one of our topics, Brad. And I think he's got it already.
Maybe.
All right. Are you guys ready to roll? Ready to start?
Ready.
All right. Here we go.
Sector one. Time travel.
And we wanted to have this huge discussion about the movie Looper. Because all of us, Anessa, myself, and Paul, all saw it. But Brad is here. He hasn't seen it yet. We're still going to talk about it, but not in the detail that we were going to talk about it. So we have to skirt around a few issues, a few plot points in the movie discussion. So,
it doesn't seem fair to the whole.
I think you should
just go ahead.
No, it's fine, Brad, because...
I don't want to spoil it for you.
And there's some
the listeners.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a little bit too early to discuss the finer points. Maybe because the movie's only been out less than a week, so we should probably give people some more time to watch it. So let's do kind of a general discussion. Anessa, your first thoughts. What did you think of it?
Me first. All right. I enjoyed it. I mean, to me, it wasn't hard to follow, which I heard some people talking on the way out of the theater that it was hard to follow. They didn't quite catch everything, but it really wasn't all that difficult to follow. So I'm guessing maybe they had to go pee at some point during the movie and miss something.
Well, that must have been a long pee because, I mean, I left for maybe 3 minutes and I was fine. So
yeah, and the other thing was there weren't any surprises, in my opinion, or major surprises, but I still enjoyed the movie. I still enjoyed the flow of the movie for the most part. I will say that something that really bothered me was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's makeup.
Well,
it distracted me.
Yeah, they had to make him.
I know why they did it. They were trying to make him like the younger version of Bruce Willis, but it was to the point where I was a bit distracted.
Yeah, no, it was distracting. Once I saw it, it couldn't be unseen. I mean, it was every time I looked at him, it was like it was looking at a younger, skinnier version of Bruce Willis. It was a little bit freaky.
It kind of reminded me of maybe if you went to a wax place and you saw a wax museum and you saw a wax figure of a younger Bruce Willis. That's kind of what it reminded me of.
Or like maybe an animation slash video game version of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, maybe?
Maybe.
Brad?
Brad was going to say something?
You know,
Brad?
The one, and I was, sorry to interrupt, but I was talking to Anessa about this earlier in the week, and what I noticed from just seeing the trailers is, are you guys familiar with the phrase or the term Uncanny Valley?
Yes.
So it's, for those of you that don't know what it is, essentially it's a description of, from computer-generated characters or CGI characters. And there's a point at, and it's actually not limited to just CGI. I mean, it is possible to hit the Uncanny Valley with special effects makeup and things like that. And what the Uncanny Valley is the point where you create something that is lifelike. And there is a kind of a sweet spot where you can hit that is, it's not real enough or it's not fake enough.
Mm-hmm.
Where it hits a point where your brain tries to make something look human and try to read facial expressions. And, you know, when we talk to people, you know, you have a whole facial, your facial expressions and things, you know, I'm, of course, wearing my crappy 3D glasses today. But I mean, your face does certain things, and there's a certain point at when you hit this uncanny valley where the face is not moving quite right, where you're trying to make something human or realistic, and it's not quite right to the point where your brain looks at it, and it's almost a form of horror. Your brain can't fathom or wrap your head around this thing that you're looking at that's trying to mimic being human. I think, what was it? The Final Fantasy movie, I think, is a good example of that. It was a really expensive CGI movie that had, I think, Alec Baldwin did a voice in it.
Was it the one with Jessica Rabbit? Was it the one with Jessica Rabbit? I forget the
name. What's that?
Was it the one with the character of Jessica Rabbit?
Roger Rabbit.
No,
Were they like in the 1930s, like mobster? Was it that?
No, it was The Spirits Within, Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within.
Okay.
And this company, you know, spent a lot of time, a lot of money, putting this movie together, doing research, and what they made was spectacular, but the faces were not quite right. And that was one of the things, editing and plot aside, one of the things that people complained about was the Uncanny Valley. And I guess the point I'm trying to get to is the makeup, from what I saw from the trailer, tried to make, and I can't remember the character.
Joseph,
name, no.
The Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Trying to make him look like a younger version of Bruce Willis's character, but it's not quite right. His face isn't moving quite right because of the makeup and appliances that are on his face. It seems off.
Was it real life makeup or was it computer generated?
I'm pretty sure it was real life.
It was makeup that was physically applied to his face.
Because I was wondering that through the entire thing, going, did they actually make up his face, or is that just, you know, is he running around
I'm
the set like
sure
with
that was makeup?
Was he running around the set with those blue things on his face? You know, the blue dots.
I'm pretty sure it was makeup.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was just something that really bothered me.
So let me ask you, Brad, what do you know about Looper? So we don't spoil too much. Do you know the story? The basic plot to it?
I do know the basic plot that loopers are, it's kind of about, it's like, isn't it the mob will put people back in time,
mm-hmm.
and then they're basically assassinated by these folks that are hired by the mafia to assassinate these people that they send back in time to them.
Yeah,
that's their gig.
And we find out in the movie what Looper means, and I'm not gonna reveal that to you because it's kind of a huge plot point, don't you think, Anessa? What the actual definition, what Looper means?
I think they actually mentioned it in some of the trailers.
I don't remember that. I
thought. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say I don't remember, but maybe I didn't see enough trailers. Maybe it was on one I didn't get a chance to see.
I didn't really watch
the
trailers until after the movie, but I want to say that they do mention what a looper is, that they're a hired hitman for the mob that.
Well, no, not
kill people.
But that's not. Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying.
I know, but I'm just saying that they end up having to close their own loop.
Yeah.
But it is mentioned in the trailer, in a trailer.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, and actually in some of the interviews and things that I've heard, essentially these assassins have eventually may have to kill themselves in the of the future.
Right, because their services are no longer needed.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
They know too much.
And that's what happens when the older version of the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character comes back. And it's Bruce, I was about to say Bruce Springsteen. No. Bruce Willis. That'd be weird.
That would have been a whole other movie.
Yeah. Baby, I was born to run through time. But no. Bruce Willis is a freaking badass in this movie. Like, he does some...
He's a badass in every movie.
Yeah, but he is like... I don't know how much of that is stunt work, but he is kicking some serious ass in this movie. Like, he's... Nobody can stop him. He's, like, unstoppable in this movie. And
yeah.
Do you think they treated the whole subject of time travel pretty well, Anessa?
Yeah, I guess for the most part. There wasn't, like, a huge amount of time traveling aside from the mobsters sending people back to be assassinated by the hitmen. So, I do like that they did incorporate basically whatever changes. It's basically a possible future. It's not necessarily mm-hmm. set in stone. And
yep.
I did like that.
And I
like spoiling anything.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil.
They do address that, you know, what happens in the future isn't necessarily set in stone.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
And I do like that. And it kind of gives people the sense that some people, you know, like their life is already marked out, like it's fate. And that kind of gives the, it tells them otherwise that you can determine your own fate.
So what did you think of that kid? Did he freak you out a little bit?
I wasn't really creeped out by the kid all that much until, like, one particular scene with the guy that came looking for people.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say anything else, but...
Yeah. No, I know what scene you're talking about, and it's pretty, yeah, it's pretty out there. It's a little shocking.
Oh. Yeah, that was probably, as far as any instance where you would be creeped out by the kid, that would be the part.
I thought Emily Blunt did a fantastic job. I thought she stole the movie. I thought her acting was crazy good.
Yeah, she did pretty good. I like her trying to intimidate whoever's out in the cornfield.
Oh, yeah.
With a shotgun.
Yeah. No. And it turned out, yeah, that was interesting. I liked the future tech a lot, like the motorcycles,
they actually had like hover type technology.
Yeah, they hover. Yeah,
I didn't see any hoverboards, but the motorcycles hovered.
Yeah, and you know, Rian Johnson, the guy that wrote this and directed it, did such a good job getting every little detail. There was a scene where the hover bike was sitting outside that cafe. And you know how your car, when you just get done using it, and you hear that crackling sound from the heat, it's kind of expanding or deflating, whatever. It's making the noise. It's metal noise. You could hear that coming off that motorcycle in that scene. That's how much detail that he had in this movie. I was really impressed with that.
I don't think I caught that.
Yeah, only I would catch something like that. You know, so.
I don't think I caught the engine cooling sound.
Anyways, yeah, I thought it was great. I recommend it to anybody. It's a great, not only it's a science fiction, great science, finally, a really good science fiction story, but it's also a great, it was filmed wonderfully. It was beautiful the way it was shot. Some of the scenes I was really impressed by. And just great acting, great writing, great filmmaking.
Right, I did enjoy it, and I'm really glad that they actually read and kind of were inspired by All You Zombies from Heinlein. Because if I'm not mistaken, this is where they got their inspiration from.
Really? Okay, I think we talked about this in a previous episode of Tris.
Yeah, it's nothing like All You Zombies, but I like that they read it and they were inspired enough to actually make this movie. Make it
cool.
So yeah, if it was All You Zombies, it would just be this guy that's his own grandfather or his own dad and
okay.
Mother and
yep.
All of the above.
Yep. I remember that discussion now. We'll talk about it in more detail. We'll talk about it in more detail next week when Paul's back. And that will give people more chance to watch it.
Probably the paradox
thing
didn't really happen though.
No. But
that kind of bugged me.
There was there was something that kind of bugged me about, and I don't want to talk about it too much because it's going to spoil it for Brad. But how they were trying to go after both of them when only going after one of them would have been fine. You know.
Yeah, that didn't really make any sense to me. I'm really.
Hey Brad, can you turn your speakers down? We're getting feedback. We're getting Anessa back at us. At least I am.
You can't have too much of me.
That's you from the future. That's two of you.
That's me from the future.
Yeah.
So
continue. Yeah.
I lost my train of thought.
Sorry. It's my fault.
I blame Dave. Although maybe they were just trying to go after the older one, so that way they would allow the other one to live their life. I don't really know the angle they were going for.
So they could kill him in the future. But it's in the past.
Pretty much.
Time travel.
I don't know.
It's confusing.
I'm just guessing.
All right, so there you go. We'll have another discussion on Looper next week here on the Time Traveling Robots in Space. Before we go into the subject of robots, we would love to hear what you thought of Looper or anything else that we're talking about on the show tonight. Email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. That's our email address. Or you can call our voicemail. Leave us a message, 805-328-3966. You know, it's kind of funny. is I have the Galactic Netcast Google Voice number coming to my phone. So sometimes I'll get a call and kind of have to second guess myself. And I'm like, maybe it's a Galactic Netcast call and I shouldn't answer it because that'll just freak people out. You know, they'll hear me actually answering the phone. So if you ever call our voicemail number and I pick up, it's only me thinking it's a call on my personal line. So again, that's 805-328-3966 and galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. All right, let's move on to this.
Sector 2. Robots.
And that is Anessa's story.
It is my story. New brains alloy, or sorry, new brains allow military robots to think for themselves.
Whoa.
The new 510, huh?
I said, whoa.
Whoa. Robots thinking for themselves. So begins the end of humans. The new 510 PackBot, a favorite bomb disposal robot for military explosive ordnance technicians, will be upgraded a new 620 Amrel solid-state drive, and thus new functionality, John Frieden II of Government Computing News reports. Previously, a PackBot with a broken link would sit out on the battlefield waiting for its operator. But now, if the robot loses its link, it will retrace its steps until it has either returned to its starting point or the link is restored. This keeps operators from having to approach, of all things, possible improvised explosive devices in order to retrieve their bots. The robot can also sit itself, or can also ride itself if it trips, and it can investigate or navigate to preset coordinates even in broken terrain. Frieden wrote, "This may seem like a small step, but robots need to learn to walk on their own before they can run. Eventually, and probably not too far in the future, military robots could be deployed to dispose of bombs or guard patrols of their own. It just takes programming to help them interpret and deal with various stimuli. Researchers have recently been trying to reduce the fingerprint of operators in drone and robotic functions on the battlefield. Scientists and engineers are implementing this sort of fetch game with drones as well, hoping to send the flying bots on missions with only human monitoring rather than piloting."
Wow, that's a huge step, you know? Robots just on their own out there, that's kind of freaky.
It is. And then what if they just keep evolving and then decide to revolt against humans and kill all humans?
One day they'll be like, "I don't want to dispose of this bomb. Screw you, humans. How about I just kill you?
What do you even do?
Yeah, how about I just kill you instead? How's that sound?"
Yeah. Like, "Oh yeah, I totally dispose of this bomb. You can check it out.
I'm going to dispose of it in your face, humans." Yeah.
Kill all humans.
So interesting. That's an interesting turn of events here. Robots on their own, leading patrols without human intervention.
Yep.
What do you think? What do you think, Brad?
I saw this story, and then I also saw a story of plans to upload a honeybee's brain, essentially knowledge, into a robotic honeybee. We're really on the verge of some pretty interesting technology.
Wait a second. They're going to upload the brain of a real bumblebee into a robotic bumblebee?
Did I post that? I don't remember if I did. I remember seeing the story, but...
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're trying to have the bees kind of fly on their own.
Wow.
I'm going to go to the Galactic Netcasts Facebook page. I thought we had posted that. Maybe not. I don't see it here. It was on IO9, I believe.
Okay.
I remember seeing it, but I don't remember.
One of our favorite sites. Let me see if I can dig this up real quick. But yeah, it was just a really interesting story. And it kind of comes at a point where, you know, like honeybees are dying out. And it almost seems like science is trying to step in and come up with a more technological approach to a solution for the honey problem.
Go ahead, Anessa.
I was going to say, I did post it to the Google page.
Okay. All right. Wouldn't that be an interesting future to have a bunch of robotic insects flying around and running around, you know? Like, wouldn't it be interesting to have like a story written about the future or the history of robotics in human civilization and just kind of follow the development of robotics up until the point where they're sentient beings, you know? I could see that being a very interesting book.
It would be very...
I posted it to the questions, and right now I can't get it to slide in.
Okay, you have to bring it on air. You have to click bring it on air.
I have to click on bring on air.
Yeah.
Oh, weird. Okay, well, anyways, there's a link to that story. So they're kind of along the same lines, you know, basically creating a flying insect bot.
Wow.
By 2015.
That's just nuts. That's crazy talk right there. We've talked about it before on this show, how the future is coming up on us a lot faster than we think. You know, it's not going to be very long until, I mean, my pick, I'm not going to reveal too much, but it's robots in real life, you know, and you'll find out exactly what I'm talking about. But I'm amazed at you're starting to see it. Like, you've got the Zumbas, right? The vacuum cleaner robots.
Roombas.
What are they called?
Roombas.
Roombas?
Roombas.
Okay.
Zumbas, Roomba. The dance workout.
Oh.
Yes.
And Zubas are what you wear doing the Zumba. And then you'll have the Roomba clean up afterwards. But yeah, robots in real life, fighting our wars for us. That's awesome. It's awesome until they turn on us.
Until they turn.
Yeah.
I'll do.
Skynet. All right. Any final thoughts on this story? It's rather interesting.
I don't really have any final thoughts on this story.
No, I've got nothing else. But we're so close to such a huge leap forward to creating more intelligent artificial life that it's kind of scary.
Yeah. All right. Before we move on to space, the time traveling robots in space is brought to you by Audible.com. For you, the Galactic Netcast listener, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to taste test their service. To go along with the theme of this podcast, may we suggest The Wind Over the World by Stephen Utley. Now, this sounds like a really, really interesting book. They had a doorway into the past, but it didn't just open on a specific place or a certain day. There was sort of a flutter, and it caused spatial drift and temporal spread. Two probes might go through together on the 21st century side, but come out miles and years apart on the Solarian side. So when the second of two people go through a portal into the past is lost, the first feels an abstract guilt that eats into her pleasure at having traveled through time. Okay. The story is part of the author's brilliant Solarian Tales series. So Stephen Utley is the author, and apparently he has written a number of books, and they're all part of the series called the Solarian Tales. So check out The Wind Over the World to download this or any other free audiobook. Go to audibletrial.com/ Galactic Netcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/galacticnetcast. And we thank Audible for their support of the Time Traveling Robots in Space. And before we move on to space, Anessa, what trailer did they show at the beginning of Loopers? Did they show that movie about that goes through time? I forget the name of it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Atlas.
Yeah, Cloud Atlas. Thank you, Brad.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's right.
Yep.
Did they show that at the beginning of Looper?
I honestly don't remember seeing the trailer for Cloud Atlas.
Well, they showed it at in my showing, and I was just... That movie continues to impress me, and I haven't even seen it yet. So I'm looking forward to that one. All right. Let's do this. Before you talk, Brad, here we go. Here's your intro.
Space.
All right. What do you got for us, Brad?
All right. Space jump scheduled for October 8th. An upcoming plunge from a balloon could break the world record for skydiving, but the world may have to wait before the age of true space jumps. The Red Bull Stratus space jump, planned for by Austrian skydiver Felix Baumgartner, 43, won't actually be from space. The October 8th stunt takes aim at an altitude of almost 23 miles, or 120,000 feet, 36 kilometers, well short of the altitude where space begins, 62 miles, or 327,000 feet, 100 kilometers above the Earth. Higher jumps probably would require expensive rockets and specialized space diving suits, not to mention a thriving commercial spaceflight industry with paying customers to become reality. The limits of current technology are being pushed by Baumgartner's planned supersonic plunge. For instance, he will rely upon the largest balloon ever built for manned flight to carry him into the stratosphere. During his initial free fall, in near vacuum conditions of the stratosphere, he will have relatively little control over steering and altitude. Baumgartner will be wearing a pressure suit similar to what supersonic SR-71 Blackbird pilots once wore. SR-71 Blackbirds being spy planes that were used in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, they were
they were decommissioned.
Were they the fastest planes ever built?
They were supersonic spy planes, yes.
Okay. But were they...
And actually, the X-Men had a Blackbird.
That's right, yeah.
Huh? Yeah, there you go. Comic books, boom. You're welcome.
In your face. You going to continue, Brad, or because we
I'm
have
surprised
this is a long story. You don't have to you don't have to read the whole thing.
Oh, I'm going to read the whole thing because this is fascinating. This is absolutely fascinating. Let's see. At higher altitudes, however, the suit stops needing to become a pressure suit and starts needing to become a small spacecraft. Observes Jeff Fage, chief executive of spacesuit maker Orbital Outfitters. Not to be confused with the Urban Outfitters. Orbital Outfitters has worked on spacesuit designs for both NASA and commercial spaceflight companies such as SpaceX. But it also has considered suits that would work as space diving from suborbital or orbital vehicles. Yes.
Brad, so if these suits were made by Urban Outfitters, would they look like hipster clothes?
They'd be tight. Any jeans?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And ironic. Yes. Anyone trying to go higher than the Red Bull Stratus attempt would need a specialized space diving suit that protects him or her from even more extreme conditions. Jumping from higher altitudes means reaching higher speeds during freefall in both vacuum and atmospheric conditions and creates extra challenges for the spacesuit wearer to control descent and avoid going into a fatal spin. At high altitude, you go faster and faster and faster until you hit the thickening atmosphere, Fage told Tech News Daily. You'll have control issues in vacuum, and then you get the atmosphere. High altitude space jumping also would require rockets and suborbital vehicles similar to the ones being built by space tourism companies such as Virgin Galactic or X-Core Aerospace, Fage said. Jumping off a fast-moving rocket ship rather than a relatively stable balloon would represent a whole new challenge for would-be space divers. Fage likes likes to refer to spacesuits as integrated parts of spaceships rather than clothes you wear on launch day. His way of saying that spacesuits must be tailored to the specific characteristics of each vehicle. Space diver suits may share the same fundamental technologies, but will require different characteristics for leaping from an X-Core aerospace vehicle, traveling in a parabolic curve versus one of the Blue Origin's straight up, straight down flights. A space diving exit from a spaceship in orbit may end up making less sense than just using entire capsules as escape pods, Fage said. But he and Orbital Outfitters still see the potential use of space diving suits as backups for suborbital flights. Now, if the Red Bull Stratus jump succeeds, video footage of Baumgartner's free-falling in his full-body pressure suit and helmet undoubtedly will inspire people around the world. But the attempt by itself barely scratches the technological challenges of true space diving. And a single-person stunt is a far cry from a space diving industry. Everything goes slower than you want it, Fage says. For the space diving stuff, the business case isn't there yet, even if it's technologically achievable. Still, Fage points to the skydiving business as a possible model for space diving. Parachute makers originally supplied parachutes as emergency equipment for military and civilian pilots, but recreational skydiving eventually spun off as its own profitable industry. Similarly, space diving suits initially designed for astronauts or space tourists could someday spawn a recreational space jump industry for more people than just sponsored daredevils.
So this is the extreme sport of the future.
Space diving.
I heard a little bit more about this too. There's whole, altitude sickness issues that will kind of come into play. So, I believe that he has to like be breathing like pure oxygen for a while.
Yep.
Or he could have some serious issues with nitrogen building up in the bloodstream, making this attempt. And he is going to be breaking the sound barrier when he does this. And that's just the deal. He's going to be jumping out of this. Oh, we lost Vanessa.
Oh, she'll be back.
There she is. This guy's jumping out of this balloon, and he will be breaking the sound barrier in just the spacesuit.
So is he going to make a boom?
That's crazy. Absolutely.
That is nuts. A human is going to make the sonic boom. That is just crazy.
It's crazy.
So, the one thing I was thinking about when I was listening to this story and when I've read about this before you even talked about it, Brad, was the 2009 Star Trek movie when they have to make that jump from orbit and then land on that platform to stop the bad guy from destroying Vulcan. Spoiler alert. That was from space. They jumped from space, and it looked like they were just free-falling. They weren't floating at all. They were jumping from space, and they actually, it looked like it was either from space or it was very, very high orbit, because it looked like gravity took them right away. Remember that?
I remember that. I also remember that in order to shoot that scene, they had all of the actors standing on top of a mirror.
Really?
The old...
Yeah, I just pop. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Brad.
I just popped in and got a little bit more information. Yeah, if this is successful, in 4 days, He will be the first parachutist to break the sound barrier.
Wow.
That's an awesome record to hold.
I hope somebody is recording the audio because I'm sure that he wants to keep his sonic boom, right? That's me. Yeah. That's me going boom.
I would. That's my boom.
honey, boom, boom.
I don't need no freaking rocket cars. I am the rocket.
So this is interesting, too. He's done a couple of test jumps. He did a test jump March 15th and a test jump July 25th. His jump on July 25th was at 96,640 feet. It took Baumgartner about 90 minutes to reach the target altitude, and his free fall was estimated to have lasted 3 minutes and 48 seconds before his parachutes, plural, were deployed. He landed safely near Roswell, New Mexico.
That's awesome.
His top speed was estimated at 536 miles per hour.
Now, does he go up in that balloon by himself?
That's a personal best for Baumgartner.
Jesus. Does he go up in the balloon by himself, or are there people with him?
There's got to be people with him.
I don't know. I mean, because just think how long it would take for that balloon to come down from that high up. Those guys are taking the long way down.
But you've got a very large, very expensive helium balloon that you wouldn't want flying randomly through airspace. It would be kind of a hazard, so I'm willing to bet that they've got somebody in it guiding it back down.
Yeah. 3 days later. Yeah, we're still coming down.
It's a scenic route.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, cool. I'm looking forward to seeing this. I hope that there's video or some kind of documentation because I want to definitely check this out. All right, good job.
I do hope it goes well because it would be a horrible disaster if something were to happen.
Yeah, I hope that nothing goes wrong. Really, that would be tragedy. I really love Brad.
Look,
how
looking
you,
at his track record,
Brad, I really love how you go above and beyond on these stories. Like you, not only did you read the story, but you did more research as we were talking about it. That's why I love you, Brad. You're awesome.
Well, thank you. Well, I mean, it's so fascinating. And I didn't think that the story kind of gave the full context of everything that was going on. So thought it needed more.
Well, good job. All right. Before we do our picks, got to let you guys know that this show and the other Galactic Netcast, the Alien Invasion, which Brad is a host, one of the co-hosts of, is available on Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can get that on your iPhone. On your Android phone, on Anessa's brand new iPhone. I still can't believe. I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that you have an iPhone. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I killed my BlackBerry.
So it wasn't really by choice.
Well, I mean, it still worked. Well, it seemed like every other task I tried to do required me pulling the battery and putting it in and then waiting 5 minutes for it to go through its whole startup thing.
Yeah.
And so I just went to the store and grabbed an iPhone.
Hey, Brad.
Which I paid for. I didn't just grab it and walk off.
Brad, can you turn your volume down a little bit? I'm hearing Anessa back. Echoing back. Thank you. Is that the 5?
Yeah, I wish I had my headset because now I can barely hear you.
No, it's not the 5. Just because I've heard a lot of random little glitches that the 5 seems to have and technical issues. I ended up going with the 4S, which I'm perfectly happy with. I mean, compared to my BlackBerry, this thing's awesome.
And you're still going to get... Yeah, it's a huge step up. And you're still going to get iOS 6, which is pretty cool.
Well, I already have. Yeah, I have iOS 6, and I've... been playing with it on my iPad. And that's mainly the reason why I went with the iOS, or I guess Apple's iOS operating system, is because I've already seeded myself into their little ecosystem.
Yeah, I forgot
so
that you had
the apps I don't have to buy again.
Yeah, I forgot that you had the iPad, so you're familiar with the iOS.
Yeah, so it's familiar. It's already... I've been sucked into the dark side.
There's nothing wrong with that. Brad is listening to one of our past podcasts on Stitcher right now, as you can hear. My wonderful voice. I don't hear that enough. And you wonder why I'm still self-centered. I listen to myself all the time.
Yeah, I fired up Stitcher and pulled up the Alien Invasion podcast. So
there you go. All right, so you can get it. You can get the Stitcher on Brad's Android-based device, or Anessa's iOS-based device, or even like on the Nook on tablets. It's just an app that you can listen to shows like ours. Just go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts and enter the promo code galacticnetcasts. And we thank Stitcher and you for your support of time traveling robots in space. All right, time for our picks. And there's a reason why Lou Page was here, and why he was disappointed that Paul wasn't here, because Paul's pick was a recommendation from Lou. So that explains why he was confused and hurt that Paul wasn't here, unfortunately.
But Paul can always do his pick next time.
Yes. So tune in next week for Paul's pick. I could say what it is, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to spoil that for you. All right. So let's start with Anessa. What's yours? She's frozen. She's got her finger up. She's ready to talk.
Oh, no. There we go.
She's coming back.
You can do it, Anessa. Come back to us.
Recast. Oh, she's gone.
Oh.
All right, so I'm going to do my pick while we're waiting for hers. And my pick is Radio Shack. And this is probably the first time that we have done that, or that type of thing has been a pick. The store Radio Shack. And I was in there the other day looking for a cable or picking up something. And I was just waiting to get in line to cash out. And I saw that they have robots. Radio Shack sells robots. And I mentioned this briefly earlier in the show, that you can get a bunch of different types of robots at Radio Shack. And one of the cool ones that I discovered was a tin can robot. It's a kit that you can transform a tin can into a robot. And I'll put the link in the show notes of the podcast. And then there is another... I just did a search on RadioShack.com before the show tonight, and I found all of the robot-related things that you can get at Radio Shack. And are you going to put that in the lower third, or do you want me to?
I will give it a shot and see how it's...
And then type, and then click on bring it on air, or bring question on air.
Oh, there we go.
Yep, there we
go. Got it.
All right. Good job. Good job, Brad. You're so smart. So my pick is Radio Shack. I mean, you can get some pretty cool stuff. They haven't totally gone to the dark side and gotten rid of all their little crafty, you know, do-it-yourself stuff. There's still that aisle where you can get wires and solder and circuit boards and, you know, the Heathkit type stuff. Those things are still available at Radio Shack, and I'm so glad that they're still selling that, and they're selling robots. I mean, they have a bunch of robots. Have you noticed that? Have you looked around Radio Shack, Brad?
You know, I was in Radio Shack not too long ago, and I noticed that as well as, you know, having, they still have the science kits and stuff, including the robots, but they also have Arduino. Stuff. And Arduino is like a it's like a core kit piece where you can like build, you know, a lot of different things out of it, like, you know, sound processing units and all sorts of, you know, basically it's a little mini computer that is programmable. Yep.
Yeah, if you want to get your kids...
lots of cool stuff.
If you want to get your kids interested in science and building things, Radio Shack is definitely the place to go.
Yes.
So, Anessa, since you were gone, you missed my pick.
Hi, Anessa.
It was Radio Shack. An Hi. Actual place was my pick.
Hey, I gathered.
All right, so you're back.
I hardly ever go to Radio Shack.
Oh, you should. It's a great place. They got wires and RCA cables and coax and speakers and headphones.
You know what's a wonderful
place? Alarm clocks.
It's like a much larger version of Radio Shack.
What?
Fry's Electronics.
See, I bet that's a Southern thing. I bet we don't have those up here.
I know. I think they have them in California maybe as well. Electronic. Actually, I will look it up and see. Gator. Yeah, they've got California, Georgia. There's one in Illinois, Indiana, Nevada, Oregon, Texas.
Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut.
California, Colorado, Connecticut.
We can do all of them if you want.
Nah, that's cool.
Yeah,
I think we did something similar last week.
I think we did. So funny how we repeat things a lot on the show. All right, so Anessa, what's your pick?
My pick is a short sci-fi video from Vimeo, or found Vimeo, called Robots of Brixton. And the description on Vimeo says, Brixton has degenerated into a discarded area inhabited by London's new robots built and designed to carry out all of the tasks which humans are no longer of Brixton has rocketed in unplanned, cheap, and the film follows the trials and tribulations of young robots surviving at the sharp end of the inner city life, living a predictable existence in by poverty, disillusionment, and mass unemployment. When the police invade the one space which the robots can call their own, the fierce and strained relationship between the two sides explodes into an outbreak of violence echoing that of 1981. So, and they actually do use footage captured from the 1981 riots in Brixton, which is right outside of London.
Okay, I was going to say, that's got to be a UK city, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's outside of London, and the riots, from my understanding, is that it was a mainly black neighborhood, and there was a person that, I guess, got stabbed, and they were trying to run from the cops, and the cops caught up to them, and the people around them think that the cops were doing much or getting help fast enough, and so tensions really started to build, and I think that was in March of 1981, and then in April, like mid-April, I think the 10th through the 12th, some people, both black and white, decided to do this march through the city, and they went by the parliament and whatnot, and it ended up resulting in a riot, and a lot of people were injured, and they ended up calling, I guess the vast majority of the violence happened on a Saturday, so they called it Bloody Saturday, but it's basically, they take footage from the riot, and you'll have the robots going about their daily lives and interacting, and then at some point, you can see the tensions building up, and then it, like, breaks out, and you go on riots, and then you have, like, robot parts.
That's an interesting way to teach people history, sort of, you know? Through the eyes of a cool science fiction aspect, you know?
Yeah. And the robots were a little creepy. just their facial expressions, because, you know, like the eyes, like they were hollow for the most part. But you would see like the colors of the eyes. But it's an interesting thing. video, and it really kind of sparks your interest in the riots of Brixton back in 1981.
Cool.
I recommend it.
All right. I know, Brad, you were a last-minute sub for Paul, but do you have anything as a pick that you want to throw in before we wrap up?
Sadly, no.
It's all good.
I really don't.
That's okay. No.
What's that?
That's perfectly understandable because we were doing the alien invasion and we said, hey, since Paul's not going to be on the show on Time Traveling Robots in Space, why don't you join us? So, yeah, you didn't need to have a pick. That's okay. So
okay,
but you did create a question of the week, right?
Yes, I did. Which kind of goes to we're not at the question of the week point of the
show.
No,
yeah, we are.
Oh yes, we are.
Go ahead, ask it. Ask away.
Okay. So this kind of ties in with Looper. If you could go back in time and correct the choice you made, would you do it? And do you believe it would be for the best?
I like how you labeled yourself Substitute Paul. Oh, not even using your real name. Pseudo Paul.
Pseudo Paul.
Brad. Pseudo Paul. Brad, a.k.a. Substitute Paul.
That was me.
And so I posed the question, who goes first answering it?
Well, I will. I'm going to say no. I don't think I'd want to go back in time. I mean, to change anything in particular, just because you never know what that may affect. You know, it's very, I think if you changed one thing, I think it would be a snowball effect. I think it would affect something else and something else and something else. And I think you learn a lot of lessons from the mistakes that you make in your life. So I think you become a better person by the mistakes you made. So if you go back and change the fact that, okay, I was very, very shy in high school, and I got picked on for that. So, you know, if I were to go back and change that, would I be the same person as I am now? I think I wouldn't. So I don't think I would go back and change anything.
Yeah. Okay. Vanessa?
I'm going to have to agree. Like, if I had picked any changes, then I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking about it right now, and that would make me sad if I knew what I was missing out on. But I suppose if I did have to change anything, I should have been 7. I used to play trivia a lot, and we had one of the people on our team wasn't like a normal person, and could wager anywhere from like 0 points to 20. But if you bet and you get the question wrong, then you lose out on those points. So anyway, they didn't really sound very sure of one of the answers earlier on in the night. And earlier on in the night, during the second half, you can wager points from like 5, 7, or 9. And all we had left was 5 or 7, and so we went with 7. And like the rest of the night, all I heard was, you should have bet 7! So that would be the one thing I wouldn't have to keep hearing, you should have bet 7. And then at the end, they told us that we should have bet the house, and that was like the 20 points. So
wow.
I had to listen to that too for a while.
See, you can't
so
go
I
back.
Should have bet 7.
You can't go back and have regrets, you know? You know, if. Taking the whole one thing affecting the other thing out of the picture, I think I'd probably. I was engaged once to a girl in Korea. I don't know if you guys know this part of my life. But I was in the military for...
I think you mentioned it.
Brad is shaking his head both yes and no, so I'm confused.
Well, I knew that you were in the military, but I didn't know that you were engaged to a woman in Korea.
Yeah, I was engaged to a Korean girl, and I think I would have stayed with her. I think I would have, if I knew that that choice wouldn't affect my other choices or the way my life turned out, I think I'd probably stay with her.
Well, something that big would have changed how your life turned out.
Yeah.
But it's not like betting seven and then getting third place at trivia and getting like an appetizer or something.
You mean I can't live my life outside the space-time continuum? What do you mean?
No, afraid not. The other thing that came to mind was this past year, I hung out with like friends on New Year's and we went out and it just seemed like everybody was wearing cooker shoes. And so, like, I think I tweeted, like, New Year's Eve lesson or something, like, wear hooker shoes next year. So that would have been the other thing.
Well, I love your answers to this. They're just all just very light, airy things that don't really affect anything, you know?
Because I wouldn't want to change anything major because I could be in a worse-off situation than I am now. I mean, I could be off being awesome somewhere. I mean, but yeah, if I changed anything major, then I probably wouldn't be here.
That would be an interesting story to write or a movie to make, would be a guy that gives you the choice that this one thing that you did different in your life could have made you this one. I'm going to give you one choice and it either is going to improve your life or it's going to make your life worse. Would you actually decide to, you know, I'd like to see a movie about that. That'd be interesting.
I would like to keep the same.
So, Brad.
Wasn't there a Nicolas Cage movie about that?
You know what?
I think there was.
Yeah.
Is that The Family Man?
I think you're right. This is why you're smarter than both of us combined, Vanessa.
I would not say I'm smarter. My brain is just filled with more crap than more human beings have in it, typically.
See, when I overload my brain, it just locks up the system. Just nothing moves.
I want to say it was Family Man, but I could be wrong.
I think you are right. As Brad is.
Yeah, that does sound. I'm going. I'm jumping into. Yeah, it's IMD with Tia Leone.
Okay.
Yep, he's an investment broker, blah, blah, blah. And he's got a minivan and a wife. Directed by Brett Ratner. Huh. There you go.
What else has he done, Brett Ratner?
That doesn't have a choice. It just happens.
Okay.
Yeah, it just kind of happens.
Or no, he is offered. I'm sorry, he is offered an opportunity, and he jumps at it.
But it would be interesting to see a movie with a bunch of different people making that choice. You know, I don't know. All right, so Brad, what's your answer?
All right, Brad. My answer too. It just seems to be kind of unanimous around the table here. Is no. I think. We all agree that major, you know, like for me, if I were to go back in time, that could possibly negate the existence of my son. Mm-hmm. And that's not cool. And really, I do believe that like bad choices also define us. It's not even just the good choices that we make or the good deeds that we do that make us who we are. It's also having the capacity to learn from the things that we've done that we realize we shouldn't do again. Mm-hmm. They help make us better people, I think. So I think being able to go back in time and undo some of those things, while it might make us feel better about certain things, ultimately I think that would hurt you in a different way.
And I think not just in your life, not just like personal stuff, but like professional, like I think I'm better at my job for the things that happened at my last job and losing my job and being unemployed for a year and a half. I think that taught me a lot about what to do and what not to do and how to conduct myself in a professional manner and that kind of thing. I think I actually became a better broadcaster and radio person because of the mistakes I made, you know?
Indeed.
All right.
Indeed.
That's it. Don't forget to leave us feedback. You can call our voicemail number. It's 805-328-3966. Our email address is galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Also on the website, you can go to subscribe.galacticnetcasts.com and subscribe to this and the show that Brad's regularly on, Alien Invasion. And jump on to iTunes, give us a favorable review and a 5-star rating. That would be awesome. All right, that's going to do it for Time Traveling Robots in Space number 46. Hopefully, Paul's back next week. And any final thoughts, guys, before we take off?
Should have bet 7.
Paul or Brad?
I'm looking at the show. So do we have? I'm sorry. Did we have feedback for the show?
No. That's old. That's old. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
See, we got lazy and left.
Yeah. Okay, then my final thoughts. I'm glad that you asked me aboard. I don't think I contributed too much, but I had a good time nonetheless.
Pish posh! Yeah, you totally contributed a lot. That story of the space jumper. Okay. That was awesome. Except there was...
I just read it.
There is this...
And you did extra research.
And you're making us repeat ourselves?
You're welcome.
Okay. I'm going to say it because Paul's not here. Be excellent to each other.
Be excellent to
Bye, guys.
We miss you, Paul.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.